is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The American economy, the global economy. I welcome Elizabeth Peake, my dear colleague, who watches not only the markets, but the politics of the markets. For The Hill, a columnist, for Fox News, a columnist, much on Fox Business. We begin with the American economy that is said to be slowing by some, that is said to be hardy and robust by others, that at this point is reported dealing with whatever tariffs have done to the inflation number, dealing with it. I have only anecdotal reports from restaurants and entertainment venues which are doing good business. Is there hesitation in purchasing? Don't know. Can't tell. Christmas is coming. China struggles, and that tells me that America is not importing what it used to from China, but it doesn't tell me about the direction of the economy and the all-powerful Federal Reserve. So, Liz, a very good evening to you again. Anecdotally, we're still spending money. The consumer numbers, the retail numbers have been, if not robust, certainly not dire. How do you read the American economy at this point coming to the fourth quarter? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, yeah, it's outperforming is the bottom line, John. I think particularly outperforming compared to the expectations of the Federal Reserve, which has growth under 2%, as you know, 1.6, 1.8 are the kind of numbers that the Fed is showing for U.S. growth. And in the second quarter, it was way above 3%. I think it was at 3.3. The Atlanta Fed GDP numbers are consistently above 3%. So it is outperforming. And I think what we're seeing is probably a two-tiered spending scenario for consumers, where higher-end consumers, people, for example, who are impacted by the fact that the stock market is up so significantly this year, they're spending. I mean, we've talked before about the wealth effect. The wealth effect is real, and people are looking at their stock accounts and saying, gosh, things are, you know, despite all the gloom and doom in the media, things are actually going pretty well. And so, yeah, spending has held up very well. I think there are certainly signs that the lower end of the income spectrum is not as robust. Car loans, defaults and things like that suggest that lower income consumers are struggling, but they have been, honestly, for 2 or 3 years. Those are the people who were most impacted by inflation. Those are the people who can't afford to buy a house, et cetera. So I think the overall numbers are pretty good. And so why then do we have so many signals that the labor market is weakening? Well, I do think that companies have been on hold since the tariff rollout in April, trying to figure out what it means for their business, trying to redirect their sourcing, supply chain confusion reigns, I'm sure. And I think what you've seen is not a lot of layoffs, but you have seen a reluctance to hire. Add to that the fact that you've had significant layoffs in the government sector, which, by the way, probably accounts for the rise in black unemployment, which has been a subject of concern lately. And couple those two things with the fact that AI is probably costing jobs even now, because companies are investing billions of dollars in AI, and certainly what they're doing that for is greater efficiencies, and generally greater efficiency means fewer workers. So I think there are a lot of reasons why the labor market is a little unsteady, let's say. The problem, as you know, when you start talking about the labor market and how many jobs are being added, I really feel like we're on ice that is extremely thin. Because when you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, honestly, who knows what they actually mean? The revisions have been so enormous, almost a million jobs lost in the 12 months through March, big revisions to April, May, June numbers just recently. So I have very little confidence that we know what the job additions look like right now. But what you are seeing is that sentiment amongst people, presumably who are trying to get a job, is that it's harder to do so. So I concede that the labor market is somewhat weaker, but boy, it's really hard to get your hands around exactly how weak that is. On the Fed, they signaled concern, of course, about the labor market by cutting rates. There was dissension, as you know. The president's newest pick for governor, Stephen Moran, dissented from the groupthink of a quarter point cut and wanted a 50 basis point cut. Interestingly, a couple of other governors have come out recently and said, well, yeah, we did cut. We are concerned about the labor market, but that doesn't mean that we're adopting a much looser policy going forward. So I think there is conflict on the board. The St. Louis Fed president, Alberto Mussolini, recently came, I think Monday, said that he's more concerned about inflation. He wants to keep policy restrictive. But the interesting thing to me is he did use the word restrictive. And Moran, Trump's newest hire, also is talking about how policy right now is restrictive. So, look, I think as the data comes in over the next several weeks, if spending begins to falter, if it doesn't look like we're going to have a good Christmas season, any of those things, or if inflation bounces up, I think we get a PCE number next week. Excuse me. I think we're going to see the Fed possibly, you know, even more embroiled in controversy and uncertain about the path forward.
Artificial intelligence. The FT has an analysis of the executives of 500 companies, the S&P 500, and they come to this observation, not conclusion. This is the FT now. It's London. It's Europe, which is nowhere on the AI map, either for data centers or for labs. Nowhere. It's watching this happen in the U.S., and it's guessing it's happening in China. The biggest U.S.-listed companies keep talking about artificial intelligence, reports the Financial Times. But other than the, quote, fear of missing out, end quote, few appear to be able to describe how the technology is changing the business for the better. Liz, I'm entertained because it is clear that the FT wants to write a bearish piece about AI. But they add this paragraph. Big tech giants such as Microsoft, Alphabet, Amazon, and Meta have regularly extolled AI's benefits, pledging to invest $300 billion this year alone to develop the infrastructure around large language models. Translation, there's money on the table, real money, not vaporware.
Yeah.
What has to happen for Europe to understand that we've changed, that we're in the leadership and they have to catch up?
It's a curious time to write such an article because President Trump was just in the UK and took with him tech giants who are pledging to invest hundreds of billions of dollars in the UK. So is the FT saying, no, we don't want it because after all, this is all a sham and a chimera and we don't really believe in AI. It's pretty peculiar reporting, if you ask me. Look, there's a lot of concern that enthusiasm about AI is outstripping the reality. But as compared to the dot-com boom, which is what some people compare it to, you know, you go back to that, John, probably a lot of your listeners have forgotten what went on in the dot-com boom and around the year 2000, but there were companies generating enormous capitalizations that literally had no business model. They had no revenues. Guess what? These companies do have revenues. NVIDIA, for example, which is probably the most darling of the darlings at this point, just announced it's going to invest $100 billion in a partnership with OpenAI. That's real money. And to your point, all the investment going into data centers, the companies spending on new chip production and so forth, all of that is real money. I think it is very risky to let skepticism about today's valuations, for example, override the sense that this is a monumental shift in technology, a monumental shift in how companies are going to invest going forward, what their workforce planning looks like, et cetera. This is a real change. I don't know any economist or anyone who actually knows something about it that doesn't think that the productivity change ahead of us is huge. We haven't seen it yet, to be sure, but it's very early days. And look, I think a lot of companies are very loath to talk to investors and say, yeah, gosh, we've just invested in AI systems that are going to allow us to cut a third of our workforce, because then their workforce rises up in fury and says, over our dead bodies, is this going to happen? So there are some pretty titanic struggles ahead. I think what you're seeing right now is, let's say, with banks hiring financial analysts, they're still hiring financial first-year analysts. They need to, but they don't need as many. And law firms don't need as many paralegals, et cetera. And I think that's going to be very broad-based. I think you're going to see an impact on employment. We don't know what that's going to be. And as the job numbers come in, possibly weaker than expected over the next several months, someone's going to take paper to pencil and pencil to paper and say, this is what's happening. And policymakers are simply ignoring the implications of it because they don't know what to do. They were actually, if you're a congressman or a senator and you're worried about unemployment rising in your district because there's so much use of AI, what is the remedy for that? And nobody really has the answers at this point.
I think of a line of Model T Fords in 1920 parked in front of Lincoln's Memorial. And the explanation is, see, nobody wants them. See, nobody wants them. Therefore, this hectic pace of investing in car companies is going to come to nothing. That's 1920. Yeah. 1920, the recovery from the war. I could use other examples like, who needs a telephone anyway? We don't know anybody over there.
Right. There's no one we want to talk to.
So it's not for us to reassure. It's a puzzle, though, when the FT concludes that without the AI, there's no growth in the U.S. market. Liz, that's the same as saying if we took every company out that begins with the letter N, there'd be no growth in the Why do they do that? Who's,
you know, I mean, I think a lot of people are concerned that the Mag 7, all of which are now up, by the way, for the year, which is the first time this year that that's happened. I think they're concerned that that's what now a third of the S&P market cap, something like that. These are just gigantic market capitalizations.
They're all trillion-dollar stocks, all of them.
Yeah, but guess what? The earnings are growing into the multiples. Again, that's the big difference between now and the dot-com era. Wait 2 years and NVIDIA's market capitalization or its PE multiple is going to look pretty reasonable. That's what's happening. And, are any of these companies possibly going to have a stumble along the way? Of course, Apple had a stumble, but you know what? Now it's come roaring back. Amazon's had some ups and downs, come roaring back. Boy, Tesla's had some ups and downs. But it doesn't mean that these seven stocks are infallible or that these are the only seven stocks. You know, there are going to be other companies that come along in this AI wilderness that I'm sure knock our socks off with innovation and new ideas and new applications for AI. But that this is happening, no question it's happening.
Elizabeth Peake writes a column for The Hill, writes a column for Fox News, much on Fox Business. I'm John Batchelor.